My goodness, that sounds like the beginning of a movie, doesn't it? Sorry. Good morning, and may I say a very big and sincere thank you to the Chancellor, to the members of the organizing committee for this conference, to our distinguished guests and speakers, and to dear colleagues and speakers. I am really excited about being here, and let me tell you why. Does the number 91 have any special significance in this part of the world? Probably not, but in my life it does. And why? Because I have wanted, this is the 91st country I have visited, and I want you to know that this Iran has been on the top of my list for the last 10 years. So I want to say to you, you really have made my dream come true. Thank you very much. Well, I'm not going to start with the definition of internationalization, even though that is what many people think of me as someone who's worked with the concepts of internationalization. I'm going to start with a story about how internationalization walks on two legs. And the first leg is that of mobility. And that is the sub-theme of this conference, mobility programs. So we are talking about all different kinds of mobility, the growth of mobility in terms of people, our students, our scholars, our experts, the growth in programs and providers. This by I mean by international branch campuses, double joint degree programs, co-tutel, franchise programs, joint universities, a whole variety of the way programs and providers move across borders to reach the students. We also are seeing a major increase in the mobility of policies and regulations. And these policies are both at institutional levels, at national levels, and at international levels. And they deal with important topics such as quality assurance, credit accumulation, qualification recognition, learning outcomes. But we cannot forget that in academic mobility, our research is translating into ideas and knowledge accompanied by values and customs and practices. So there are four P's for you, okay? People, programs, policies, and practices. But that is just one of the legs. The second leg is known as internationalization at home. And I'm not going to talk about that today. That is not one of the themes of this conference. But I do want to mention it. Because when we, for instance, and when I'm, what I mean by internationalization at home, I'm talking about our learning and teaching process, our pedagogy, our curriculum, our domestic research that collaborates with international research. Much emphasis in internationalization is put on people mobility, students, scholars, and experts. And so it should. But do you know what percentage of students have the opportunity to have a mobile experience from their university? When I ask this question, I say, from Canada, what percentage do you think of our students have an opportunity during their four-year undergraduate or their graduate programs? What would your answer be? I get 50%, I said, oh, What about 10%? I go, oh. What about 5%? I go, oh. Maybe it's about 2%. And Canada is no different than Australia, no different really than the United States. So even if we were talking 5% have a mobility experience, what happens to the other 85%? These students, scholars, are living in as much of an internationalized world as everybody. What can we do to help them understand the different cultures, the interrelationship among countries? And so I just wanted to make sure that I talked about what we're seeing today, program mobility, but put it in the context that mobility in internationalization is only one aspect. Curriculum, teaching, pedagogy, learning, the faculty member development are other really important parts of internationalization. So I'm going to start and I'm going to ask you five questions. First question, to you, what does cross-border higher education mean to you? Think about it for a minute. What does offshore education mean? What does borderless education mean? What does transnational education mean? Do you see where I'm going with this? Really, what are the similarities and the differences in these different concepts? And I'm here to say that there is mass confusion about what these terms mean. Are students involved in this? Is it programs? Is it providers? Is it campuses? What is involved in these five questions in terms of mobility? I'm going to use the term transnational education for a while, okay? Of all of those four terms that we saw, I have chosen and will work today for a while with the term transnational education because in general parlance, it usually means programs and provider and does not include student mobility. So we have done some very major research on TNE. First of all, we looked at 50 countries and then we narrowed it down to 25. What were the national policies of a country that facilitated, enabled, or regulated program mobility? Most, and we found that there was much more on student mobility than on program mobility. If you're interested in any of these reports, they're all available free on the web. The second one we looked at was host countries. Here is an important issue. When we talk about program and provider mobility, we need to talk about sending country and we need to talk about host country. For years, the emphasis has been on the sending country. Who is sending out the franchise programs, the international branch campuses, the kind of distance education open university. Most of the discussion, the debate, the research has been from the sending country perspective. And that is where this misnomer, this myth that we're dealing with in transnational education comes from, that it's commercial. The commercialization that was suggested earlier this morning. But in any kind of mobility of program, there are partners. There is a receiving country, a host country, as well as a sending country. We decided it was very important to look at what the host country was saying in terms of the impact of TNE. So, you'll find that we worked with 15 host countries in all regions of the world and looked at eight different groups, employers, higher education experts, TNE students, non-TNA students, teachers, eight of them, and they gave us their comment. But what did they give us? They gave us their opinions, they gave us their perceptions. There was no data, no empirical data, no empirical evidence. And so then we worked on a important research that looked at which countries were developing data collections on program of mobility. The next one we did was we looked at all of the academic literature. What was the common finding? What do you think was the common finding of all of these policy studies, impact studies, literature studies? The common finding was mass confusion, terminology chaos, that there are over 40 different terms to describe transnational education. There are different terms to describe the same mode, for instance, an international branch campus. At the same time, there is great confusion that TNE, or Program and Provider Mobility, is student mobility. In TNE and in Program and Provider Mobility, the majority of the emphasis is on the programs moving to the students, not the students having to move to the programs. And in our unsettled and troubled world in which we are living right now, perhaps this is something more attention needs to be given to, and also meaning more students can have access to foreign programs and foreign qualifications, given the small number of students that actually do. So what I want to do now is take the term transnational education, which is always confused with cross-border and offshore, and talk to you about it being described as international program and provider mobility. Okay? So we have international program and provider mobility, and we have student mobility. And yes, they do overlap, but we need to have some distinction. Furthermore, when we're talking about program and provider mobility, it is much more than the transfer of credits. And so when we look at, well, how important is TNE? Everybody is talking about students. I'll give you some facts that may surprise you from a sending country perspective and from a host country perspective. Let's start with a sending country. Let's start with the British United Kingdom. Are you ready? 52% of all the students registered for a UK program and qualification do it through TNE. They do not travel to Britain for their work. The programs and providers move to the students. Let's take it from a host country perspective. Let's take the small country such as Mauritius. 45% of all of the local Mauritian students who are taking their higher education do it in Mauritius through the mobility of a TNE program. In Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, it's up to 20%, Botswana's 25%. So we're seeing the growth of program and provider mobility at the same time as we're seeing growth in student mobility. International branch campuses. In 2002, 15 years ago, there were 24 around the world. Today, or 2015, there are 249, and last night I learned about five more from Assad University in Iran. The double joint degree programs are exploding. So the message here is that program and provider mobility is reaching more and more students, So the enrollments are increasing, but so are the nature of the programs and the innovations in reaching students. So because of this unprecedented growth, because of this confusion and understanding between and among countries about program or provider mobility, we have to come up with a common understanding of international program and provider mobility. And I'm going to do that by introducing a common TNE classification framework for discussion. So what does it mean? Common? It means that it's common to both host and sending countries. TNE means it relates to program and provider mobility only. Classification means that it's a major category or mode of delivery. And here we go. It's a work in progress. First of all, I'm going to talk about independent TNE provision versus collaborative TNE provision. Independent programs and providers coming into your country, or when you are cooperating, collaborating with other universities together offering a new program. So what does independent mean? Independent means that the foreign sending higher education institution is responsible for three things, three very important things. A, primarily the curriculum. B, the qualification or the award. And C, the external quality assurance. All of that has major implications for national policy as well as institutional policy. So let's look at some examples of independent TNE provision. Franchise programs. Franchise programs, you probably have known them as import-export programs. When the sending country sends in a program, some people call it a canned course, and the curriculum is designed by the sending country, it is qualified, quality assured by the sending country, and it's a qualification from the sending country. The home country, the host country, is primarily, purely the recipient of it. The second common aspect of an independent TNE is an international branch campus. This is often known as a satellite campus or a private international. This is a satellite campus of a parent university in another country. What does that involve? Once again, they send the curriculum, they are responsible for quality assurance, and they provide the qualification. And the third type is self-study distance education. And we can usually call this, as we see, MOOCs or fully online education. But what I want to emphasize is that the trend, the innovation that is happening in this is moving from independent to collaborative. I think this is a good movement in internationalization. Now, let's take those three particular issues again. Both the sending and the host country are responsible for curriculum development, teaching it, delivering it. Both countries are responsible for the qualification that's being offered, as well as for the external quality assurance. Again, you will see there's much innovation in partnerships. They are known obviously as joint and double degree programs, co-tutel programs. This is the biggest expanding area in our field. But guess what? It is the messiest. It is definitely the messiest. And yet it is where we're seeing the most creativity and academic cooperation. We'll come back to that later. The next one is joint universities. This is a relatively new development, and this is something where a brand new independent university is being established through two countries cooperating. Germany is very famous for this in their binational universities. So there's the German Oman University, the German Cairo University, the German Jordan University. We can talk about all different models. But then there's something new. This is out of Singapore. Singapore, three universities, one from the United States, MIT, one from China, Zhejiang University, and one from Singapore, have together created a brand new, independent, standalone Singapore University of Technology and Design. So this, on this collaborative side, is where we are seeing the majority of the innovation and the creativity of collaboration when it comes to programs and providers. And the third one is distance education. I would like to conclude by skipping all of the principles. Did you get all that?
And you have 5 more minutes because you are at the assignment, I put 5 minutes for you. Thank you.
But really, catch me for 5, okay? I do tend to talk too much. Okay, so going back, thank you so much. Going back to this, this is a very full slide, but it's an important slide to show the change and the innovation that we are going through in internationalization. And of course, in these programs, students are moving. And of course, in these programs, there is new research being done and new research networks. But the point is that it is the program and the provider that's moving to the student. It's not always the student moving to the foreign country. And so the important framework, the important principles of this framework and for program and provider mobility is, one, we need to be looking at collaborative program and provider mobility, and we need to look at independent. What is an important consequence of that? There are different laws, regulations, rules that must be developed by both institutions and specifically countries for independent versus collaborative. We have differentiated between when a program moves, i.e. a franchise moves, when an actual provider moves, an institution like the branch campus. So we've distinguished between program mobility and provider mobility. It's a proverb for both sending and host countries, but there are many important implications for national level agencies and for higher education institutions as they develop these partnerships. I think I've done most of the innovations. I would like to end with the challenges. And there are many. With innovation, with creativity, with breaking the mold, come challenges. We need to take these risks in international higher education. We need to understand we will have unintended consequences. But if we look at this from an academic point of view and not purely as a commercial enterprise, or not purely for status building and not capacity building, I believe we will be able to meet these challenges. That we will be able to be looking at making these risks turn into opportunities. The management of these partnerships, the roles and responsibilities of the partner institutions is very challenging. I do not think we need to underestimate that. Qualification recognition. So, A student has a degree from a program that is offered in their country by a foreign provider. Is that qualification going to be recognized in their home country? That's not always the case. Is it going to be provided, or is it going to be recognized in the sending country? Usually. Is it going to be recognized in a third country that the student wants to go to for higher education or for a job? Not necessarily. We have to work very hard at qualification recognition. Quality assurance. This is not accreditation, but this is quality assurance. Of the curriculum, teaching, staff, pedagogy, exit, entrance exam, standards. Quality assurance will have an increasing role, an important role, as we move into this collaborative program and provider. Now I would like to get to a topic that is really important, and that is the integrity and the trustworthiness of these qualifications. As I move and travel and work in different parts of the world, there are two overriding concerns that I hear about program and provider mobility, or T&E. Guess what they are? Number one, they're there to make money, the commercialization. And number two is, we cannot trust the integrity of the qualification. And why is that? That is A, because of recognition that we've just talked about, but also because one of our innovations is that we are developing programs that give a joint degree, one piece of paper, two names of institutions on it, and we're giving double or triple degrees. One set of credits, courses, learning outcomes, however you want to try to capture the workload of a student, that in many cases is now being counted for two separate degrees, double degrees. And people are saying, well, which one do we trust? Which one is the one that they really work to get those? So those are important issues, is the integrity and trustworthiness of a qualification, but most importantly, the recognition of it so that the students are getting due recognition for it. And the last one is this whole area of policies and registration at the national level. So these challenges I've talked about are technical and they are policy oriented. I would like to close with challenges that we have at the values perspective. Is there a shift in values in our internationalization? Is there this shift that we're moving to competition rather than cooperation and collaboration? Is there a shift that's moving to self-interest and self-gain instead of mutual interest and mutual benefit? Is there this movement towards commercialization, money-making, profit-building, to this is exchange, scholarly academic change? And finally, are we using internationalization for status building rather than for capacity building and reaching excellence in the work that we're doing and making sure that internationalization is serving excellence and innovation and not purely self-interest, status building and competition? Thank you very much.